In today's conversation, I'm joined by the incredible Dana Farrant, who is going to be sharing her story from growing up in a religious cult, becoming a dominatrix, and then finding out that actually she is an incredible powerhouse. Those learnings and wisdom she had along the way in her story, she is going to be sharing with us to help you also find your inner powerhouse. Hi, I'm Nikki Collinson-Phoenix, business owner, serial goal-getter, adventure seeker, chaser of dreams, humanitarian, and believer that anything is possible. In this podcast, I will bring you conversations around transforming your business and life through strategy, mindset, kindness, compassion, freedom, happiness, and contribution from myself and from many others who have walked their own path of transformation and discovery. Because life is short and life is precious. And in the time you have on this earth, I want to give you the tools so that you too can believe anything is possible and for you to achieve your own version of success and happiness, both in your work and your life. So are you ready to shine, transform, and live your best life? Then welcome to the Chrysalis Conversations. Okay, guys, thank you so much for joining me on today's episode of the Chrysalis Conversations. And I am absolutely thrilled to have an incredible guest with us today for today's conversation. And that is the lovely Dana Farrant, all the way from North Toronto. She's got up bright and early. Well, she says she's an early riser. So she was already up and about, but it is 7 a.m. over in North Toronto. So Dana, I am really happy that even though you're an early riser, it's early to be sitting here recording podcasts. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, my pleasure, Nikki. I forgo my second cup of coffee to come and have a chat with you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And I hope when you get to it, it's worth the wait.
Absolutely.
Now, listen, Dana has a really, really cool story, and I am so pleased that she is on the show today to share that with you. So what we're going to be talking about in a moment is I'm going to hand over to Dana. She's going to share her story. And as you know, with the Chrysalis Conversations, what we're looking in here is people's stories and people's lives where they have had periods where they've made transformative decisions, choices, things that have happened that have just made them reevaluate where they are in the world, what the path that they're on, and whatever it is, just to remind them that, you know, remind you all that life is precious, life is very, very short. And if you're listening to this and you're thinking, do you know what, life is not necessarily going in the way I want it to be going in, that maybe as a result of the conversations that you listen to on this podcast, it inspires you to make different decisions, different choices, and perhaps a different path for you. So I'm going to hand over to Dana because she's got an incredible story to share with you. And then we're also, she's got some tips she's going to share with you at the end. And then, of course, we're going to have our little fun get to know you round. So Dana, tell us your story, because I know snippets of it, but I'm really, really interested to hear the full version.
Oh, thank you, Nikki. Okay, so I need to kind of, you know, back up just to give the listener, you the listener, a little bit of history. So I grew up in a cult. And when I left that just before my 18th birthday, I then ended up on this journey of trying to untangle my brain. So unprogram all of the things that I grew up with. And went for various therapies.
I'm so sorry to interrupt you, Dana. Then I want to interrupt you because you kind of brushed over that first bit. And actually, I've got about
a big bomb, right?
Questions to ask
you. Okay, go ahead.
About the first bit. I just want to ask initially, were you born into the cult?
Yes. Yeah. So my so my parents were heavily into it when I was born. Go ahead.
Yeah. And so literally at the point of 18, when you left, you knew no different, you know, that was all you'd ever known for those first 18 years of your life.
Yes. Yeah. So, okay. And cults are very much about, you know, changing the wiring in your brain so that you are stuck in that situation, you know, the brainwashing that goes on. So I grew up Jehovah's Witness, which is a cult, and the brainwashing happens 4 to 5 times a week. So by the time I left, that was all that I knew. That was my entire surroundings. Those were the people that I grew up with. That was my entire socializing, because I wasn't allowed to socialize with people outside of school, you know, that organization. So nobody at school. So I kind of, you know, when I left, I was this, you know, neophyte as far as, you know, what was going on in the world. Who am I? You know, because when you leave, you know, that kind of programming, there's no set, you know, saying, okay, I know who I am, because everything revolved around that religion. So hopefully that set it up a little better. So when
I'm just somebody that's quite interested. Yeah. I said, I'm just quite interested personally in cults. I read a lot of books and stuff about people who have left. It's just something that really interests me, which is like, we're not just scraping over that little bit. We need to touch on that. So yeah. So you're 18. I'm handing back to you now.
Okay. Yeah. So 18, you know, like I said, I don't really know who I am. So I spend, you know, a lot of time in therapy. I also spend a lot of time going through extremes. So I went off the deep end with drugs and alcohol, and then went to the other side, complete abstinence, and, you know, went off the deep end with sex, and then, you know, the other side. And it's not until later, when I really started researching and studying cults, that I realized what was going on was that I was trying to figure out who I am. And it was only in experiencing these two extremes that I could say what I wanted for me. So it looked really crazy in my 20s. I'll admit it. It was kind of crazy then. And I think anybody from the outside would be like, what is she doing? Like, she just can't pick
a
direction.
She's doing this.
Like, oh yeah, all over the map. But still this desire to, you know, to heal what was going on. I never felt like I fit in anywhere. But at the same time, I'm like, there's something better. There's always this little niggle of like, there's something else. And so I kept looking for new ways to basically unfuck my brain. It was basically what I was trying to do. And it wasn't until my late 20s, early 30s that I actually found the most incredible healing in the most unusual place. And that place was in the kink world, the dungeon. So think BDSM, 50 Shades of Grey. And it sounds really crazy, right? Like, this is kind of crazy. I'm going to go and deal with my trauma and abuse by getting beaten. Sounds crazy. But the thing is that inside of that world, what a lot of people don't realize is that everything is negotiated. Everything is, you know, predetermined as to what we're going to do, how we're going to do it. And there's a loose master plan. And the idea is that when you take somebody through a scene, then you also are able to give them space to take back their power. And that's what I had people do.
Somebody is still in control, isn't it? Because it's a predetermined experience.
Yes.
There is still, I think people do feel sometimes that it's an uncontrolled environment. Actually, it's a very controlled environment.
Very, very. Because you have to keep somebody safe. And this was the thing. I had somebody who was really holding a beautiful, safe space for me. So I could completely let go. And then, you know, at the end, taking back that power and reclaiming those pieces for me was like having hypnosis therapy on steroids. It's very kinesthetic. It's really locked into the body as far as, okay, this is now changed, right? At the cellular level, it's changed. So I was able to let go of years of trauma, years of abuse, and come out of that in a way that just was, it blew my mind. Let me just say that. Like, I woke up after a couple of sessions. I woke up, I remember looking out over the Toronto skyline. I was visiting a friend, and it was this gray, drizzly day. And I'm like, oh, it's so pretty. At the same time, I'm like, I have never had that thought. Never. And I realized that I had actually been depressed up until that point. This was a huge awakening. Like, I was able to break through it. I wasn't going into the BDSM in order to do that, but it was a byproduct of having this incredible healing space, this ability to surrender and let go of the baggage, let go of, you know, who I think I am, and step into something new. Mm. So that was like extremely profound. And I get that, you know, I just want to say for the listener, this is not a required path. Okay.
But it was your path.
It was my path.
It was the right path for you.
Yeah. This is not
you
the
know
only path
what? There could be someone listening right now that's going, you know, that could be, like, you know, who knows? It's another path I could explore. It's another avenue that I haven't considered. Maybe this is my one, you know. It's and, you know, let's think outside of the box here as well, huh?
Yeah, it's very different. But it did inspire me to then, you know, go and learn how to become a dominatrix. And that was the turn. That was one of the main turning points for me. I mean, this is so many in life, right? But that was a huge turning point, because in experiencing what I say, both sides of the whip, gave me a really, I know there's always these fun pieces, right?
Right.
So in experiencing that, I understood what it is to surrender. I understood what it is to let go and to allow the healing to happen. And so when I would take people through sessions myself, then I could invite them into that same space, invite them into this piece of surrendering. So it wasn't just about having kinky sex. It was actually about healing and transformation and getting people to see themselves as stronger and more powerful than they normally give themselves credit for. And that's huge, right? We look at all of the different things, whether it's coaching or, you know, personal transformation programs, whatever it is, a lot of it is about this piece of inviting people to step into more of themselves, more of who they are at the core, instead of the, you know, predefined ideas.
One that society thinks that we should all fit into.
Oh my goodness. Oh, that could, you know, we could talk for hours on that. So, right. But these pieces is, that's the core. Like when I look at my whole history, that is so much of what I do, is getting people to realize who they actually are, getting them to understand what power they are capable of. So this was one path, and I did this path for about 6 years. I was like full in, like all the way in. And then I hit another like turning point. So 2012, I have a double whammy. One, the kink community decides to turn on me and starts like, right? And everywhere I go, I'm getting bit, 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 bit. And so I was like, okay, that's.
Can I just say that I'm just loving the fact that it has a name, the kink community?
Of course, every community has their own little name.
I know. But I'm like, I didn't know that one. So I know that now.
There we go. Yeah. There's, you know, there's communities, there's parties, there was education. Yeah. And
So they've done a bit of a 180 on you.
Yeah. So that's going on. And then simultaneously, so I was running a big business. I had staff and, you know, we were doing a massage supply outlet, and I have a couple of massage therapy clinics. So simultaneous to the kink community turning on me, my manager comes to me and says, like, we need to change something. Otherwise we're going to hit a bankruptcy. So we look at everything that we're doing, and we're like, okay, we got a plan in place. We're restructuring it. It's all going good. The plan is executing. And then in a 45-day period, we had everything go wrong that could go wrong in such a way that we were not going to recover. We had big clients not pay their bills. We had somebody break into our merchant account, steal thousands of dollars, which at a critical point was a tipping point. And then there was a third thing. Now I'm gapping on it. I'm gapping on the third thing. But basically it was like this hit. And it was, you know, basically the Titanic, just one too many hits that we couldn't recover from. So we ended up doing a bankruptcy, and against my lawyer's suggestion, I'm clear of this now so I can talk about it, but against my lawyer's advice, I restructured instead of just closing the doors. And that was the best thing for me, because that transformation, letting everybody go, moving it down to something that was just scalable, manageable, profitable, which was the other big thing, that piece, that was so cool, because when I got through the first 4 months of crazy work and crazy long hours, I actually had a bit of breather, and I started to evaluate and say, okay, what went wrong? You know, beyond the obvious, beyond those pieces I talked about, what actually went wrong? And I started to look at how this piece of me being a dominatrix was actually a hindrance to my business because I wasn't integrating it. So okay. all of my personal stuff, I was like so much in my power, but then in my, I had segregated it, right? Because there's all this stigma and people don't want to know about it. So I was secret. But I had done so much separating that I wasn't being the powerhouse in the business. And so I started playing with it and bringing that energy of the dominatrix into my business. And I would notice every time that I was like standing fully in that power, my sales would go up. And if I let it slide, because we're human, if I let it slide, sales would go down. And I was like, this is really interesting. And that's where I started really playing with the inner dominatrix idea. And, you know, I don't lead with that branding as much, but that piece of the energy of who you need to become as a business leader was what I saw was really missing for a lot of business owners, and particularly women. You know, women aren't taught how to hold their power in a way that is, right, that's authentic, that's not bitchy, that's all of these pieces. And so that's where I really started leaning into, you know, working with business owners so that they could change the internal. Yeah, change the internal so they change the external. Yeah. So it's so amazing how our own journey, my own journey, really opened things up to be able to help other people.
So when did that start? When did you then do the restructuring? So when did that come in that you then started going, do you know what, actually, I'm going to start working with business owners?
So 2012, I did the restructuring. And so that would have been about 2014 when I really started leaning into the coaching side of things. Plus, I had to get to the point where I could build, I built the business up enough to have somebody else run it for me so that I could have time for the coaching.
Oh, that's fantastic. And yeah. When you look at the people that you work with right now, so when you look at the business owners that you work with, are they coming from small business owners, CEOs of businesses, or are you working with people from any level of business owner?
I've got a range, but I tend to have a bit of a sweet spot for the people that are about 250,000 now. They want to scale to a million or maybe up towards to five. So they could be at 250 to a million. And then they're wanting to make that next leap. So for me, that's an area that I understand. And I think that's what allows me to really help them to change the mentality of what they're doing so that they show up differently in their business and handle it differently.
And what are the common things that you come across when you're working with these business owners? What are common themes that you come across? Because I'm fairly certain that actually, you know, there's a lot of the things that hold people back are the same for everyone. So what Absolutely. Kind of common stuff do you come across?
So a few things are themes. So for me, of course, because I have so much education, history, and experience in dealing with trauma, both for my personal trauma, but also working with clients, that a lot of my business owners have still not resolved. Like they've done some surface work with the trauma, but there's those deeper layers which are keeping them in the loops of, you know, sabotaging their business in some way, shape, or form, hiring bad employees. You know, that's where it's showing up. So that's kind of the underlying. And like I said, the surface problems are they have bad key employees. That are not, they're underperforming, or maybe they've hired friends and family that are underperforming. That's another common one. Yeah. A lot of challenges around being profitable. So whether it's in their pricing that they don't hold the
being
pricing.
Being comfortable with being profitable.
Yeah. And so there's a lot of people. So one client is a great example. So she came to me, she was doing about $275 in her business. And, but no profit. She was running like mad, doing so many different things. Like she's got a podcast going and she's doing sales training and she's doing this and she's doing that. And she's got all these different things that don't relate to her core business. And so I, you know, had to work with her, get the trauma out. And once we got the trauma out, then it was easier for her to start letting go of all of these extra things. And this is the thing that happens with a lot of people is that when we have not dealt with our trauma, we will keep ourselves in chaos unknowingly. Like, it's not like we're like, oh, I'm just going to keep myself in chaos so I can't think of it. No, we just subconsciously create these situations. But when we actually dig in and do that deeper work, then we can change it. Then it's like, oh, why am I doing this? Let me just let that go. So she's fabulous. She's taken her business. They're about about 1.7 now. She's on track to do probably 3 million this year and then 5 in the next year or two after that. So I'm really, really pleased with her. But we had to change what was going on underneath. Otherwise, it wasn't going to change. So, yeah. So I'd say the other things that I would see very commonly.
So do you find a lot of the stuff that you're doing?
Go ahead, Nikki.
As I was just saying, do you find that when you're working with people, that there is a balance between the issues being a mindset issue or a strategy issue, you know, or is there an equal balance between the two, or is there nearly always a bias? You know, because I'm quite a believer that it doesn't matter how much strategy you got, if your head's not in the right place, nothing's going to happen. Do you find that it's often more a mindset piece?
That may be a bit of a confirmation bias because those are the people that are drawn to work with me. But I do find that there's more people that it's a mindset first as opposed to strategy. You get those rare people that they just act, right? It's like, oh, that's what I need to do. Okay, boom. And they go and they do it. But for the rest of us, we can see what we need to do. And then there's this like hesitation, right? We're always like, maybe, right? I can't get... Go, right. So for those people, that's where doing this deeper work is so vital, because when we remove the resistance to moving forward, for whatever reason it might be, then we can implement all these great strategies. And for me, I really see that strategy work is simple. It's easy. I can give you ideas quickly, or I can hook you up with somebody else who can. And my belief really is that it's like, don't be doing it yourself. As a business owner, that's the biggest thing that needs to stop. Stop doing the work. Start running the business. And when you start shifting the mindset and start to believe that you can be profitable, believe that you can create what you need to create in your business, then there isn't the hesitation to pay somebody who's going to take your business further. So,
and you know what? I don't know if... that's a really, really great point, because a lot of the people that I work with have really struggled with the concept of outsourcing, of relinquishing that, and actually realizing that actually probably one of the best investments you could make is to get rid of stuff and, actually start, like you say, being the CEO of your own business rather than being the whole entity.
Yeah.
Of your own business. Do you see that a lot?
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. I that's one of the things that I will, gently shove people is hiring.
I find that really, really a common one.
Right? Hiring before you think you have the money to hire. It's about hiring when you have the need to have people, as opposed to hiring when you think you have the money to have people, that's what I always found in my business. I always had to hire and then scramble to find the money. And then we get caught up and that was the process. So I think we have a little time delay here.
And what I want to ask is a completely offset question. I think we have got a little time delay. You're absolutely right. One of the questions I do want to ask, just because I'm fascinated to know, you mentioned that the time that you were being working as a dominatrix at certain points, that was kind of like a secret part of your journey. But now, obviously, we're talking about it. It's out more in the public domain. It's no longer a secret thing. Are there people when you're working with them that are, how does that go down? Because I think we talk about your people's USPs, and our USP being ourselves and being something different, not being, the same as everybody else. Mm-hmm. And that incredible uniqueness that you bring to the table, how is that received? Because I think it's amazing.
Thank you. You know what? I find that it's this fabulous piece for cutting right down the middle. So, you know, people talk about, right? It's like you want to attract your ideal client and repel your non-ideal client. So for it is fabulous. I love, just for fun, going to some networking meetings. I mean, for me, networking locally is not a piece that actually works for me, but I do it sometimes for fun. because I go in the room and I tell people, I'll say, you know, I'm a former dominatrix and I help people to step into their inner power, you know, really become the CEO of their own business in a way that makes them profitable. Saying that, I have like divide the room almost in half, and half the room is secretly sliding their business card to me, wanting to connect. And the other half is like in shock and not knowing what to do.
Their jaws on the floor.
Right.
They didn't even hear the second half. They stopped at dominatrix.
Yeah, they're like, ah!
They have absolutely no idea what you said after that.
Yeah. So I find that, you know, the people that are wanting to be bold, they're wanting to do something bigger in their life. For them, they look at this and they go, oh my God, what great branding. And that's bold and it's out there. And so that resonates with them. So it was hard at first because I got a lot of pushback because, sorry, a little bit of a cold. I went to the wrong places. I was in the wrong rooms. I went to women's networking groups, but women who were making less than 50K a year. So there's a different mindset, right? Not that there's anything wrong with that, but there's a very different mindset that happens. And I would go in those rooms and I'd be all pumped and I'd tell them. And literally, like, there's one thing that happened very early on. I told this woman and she like sucked in her face. And then she took two steps back and she's like, I'm really happy with my husband. And she ran away. Like,
oh, literally ran away.
Oh, it's hilarious. Yeah. And I'm thinking, honey, like this was a meeting that was downtown Bay Street, right? Like right across the road was the big lawyer's office. I'm thinking, if I still wanted dominatrix clients, I'd be over there, not at a women's networking group, right? But she couldn't hear it. And I had a lot of pushback in the beginning, people saying, I need to tone it down. That's too abrasive, blah, blah, blah. And it wasn't until I got into rooms where people were playing a bigger game that I started to hear a different feedback from. I started to hear more like your reaction of like, that's really cool. Tell me more. You know, I remember going to CAPS meeting, which CAPS is Canadian Association of Professional Speakers. Now, these people are awesome. They understand the branding. They understand about being bold. They're getting on stage. And I go there and I didn't learn anything about anybody else because everybody kept peppering me with questions about my story and who I was and what I was doing. And they were all interested. I'm like, I want to know you though.
Yeah. So I don't want to talk about me. I want to talk about you.
Yeah. Yeah. So it made me realize that it was like, oh, I was just in the wrong room. It wasn't that I had the wrong branding. I had the wrong room. Now, it's still been an evolution of, you know, how do I get that marketing message across? How do I explain to people what it is that I do? But mostly I find people, when they interact with me, when they get to know me a little bit, then they're like, I think I need to work with you. And they identify for themselves. I don't need to pressure anyone.
But you know what? You said something like really, really key here that I think a lot of people need to hear that are listening to this. And it is about, is people sometimes think that if business is not working well for them, if they're not getting the clients in, if they're not making the income and it's just not happening, they start to look at themselves first and say, am I doing something wrong? Even though in their heart, they feel like they're working in the way that they should be working and they're doing the work that they want to be doing. But they start to think, well, if it's not coming back at me, what's wrong with me? Whereas actually it could be something as really simple as you're just in the wrong room.
Yeah.
And actually there's nothing to do with you that needs to change whatsoever. You are just going to the wrong places. And I think you touched on also about the beautiful filter system of owning your worth and your power when it comes to ideal client. We do sit there, you know, in the early days when people aren't familiar with the concept of ideal client and things like that, starting to feel like, well, I'm meant to just attract everybody. And actually your branding, your messaging and your identity, like you say, should equally attract and repel. And if it's repelling people, then it's doing its job.
Yeah. And that's the piece that a lot of people resist. They're like, oh, I don't want to repel anyone. And
because they feel like it's a rejection. They take it like this real personal rejection, doesn't it? Instead of saying, you know, like, why I'll have people go, oh, I've got people unsubscribing from my mailing list. It feels like, you know, what have I done wrong to upset them? I'm like, congratulations. Your email did its job. It said it filtered for you, you know? Excellent. Yeah. Let's celebrate.
Yeah. And that's the thing, when you start to recognize, like, it's okay to repel people, you know, as long as you're not repelling everybody, right? If there are some people that like it, we don't want everyone to go. But it is okay to repel some people. And in fact, it's good. It stirs up controversy. You know, I've been known to, you know, poke at things, especially on social media.
Do you poke the sleeping lion every so often?
I do, a lot, actually. Not always to my best interest. You know, I had to actually get off Facebook, because Facebook is one of those places that it's too easy for me to want to poke at people. So I switched over to LinkedIn as my platform for social media. I tend to behave better on LinkedIn, but I still poke. I just poke a little more gently. Whereas Facebook, I really stir the pot.
It's so. Just like dabbing in there.
Yeah. It's too easy, right? Like, they're so easy to poke.
I think it can blow up very quickly on Facebook as well, can't it? So, but the thing is, ultimately, you know, when you think about your learnings and your journey and your story, what would you think, you know, because obviously one of the things that, like, you talked about the transformations and certain transformative times, but obviously there was a piece back when you were leading up to becoming 18 it was a fairly big transformative time then for you to have the courage to leave everything you've ever known. And what was that time like as well for you back then to have that courage? Because that shows, you know, a lot of determination in you from the outset. You know, what was that period like too?
You know, it's funny, Nikki, like, I have people say this a lot, like, that was really courageous. Right. And I didn't acknowledge it until probably about 5 years ago that that was courageous. I just knew that I was going to die if I stayed. That was really, it wasn't about courage for me at that moment. It was like,
survival. It
was survival. Yeah. Because I could see that I was really dying inside, because it didn't line up for me. It wasn't who I was. I tried going all in at 16. I was like, all right, I'll get baptized. I'll, like, you know, go do all the things. And the more I got in, the more I was repulsed.
Yeah.
And that was more the piece. It was like, I could see where my life was going to go. I could see that I was going to end up married and children and, you know, in something that just didn't do anything for me. I didn't believe in it. By that time I saw the lies and I was questioning things and nobody could provide me great answers. And I thought, this isn't working. So it was either stay and commit suicide or get out. And, you know, they were not easy choices to make, but I guess I chose to live. So I'd say it was more of a survival.
You chose to rewrite your story as well, then, didn't you? Yeah. You know, you knew, you had a great insight in how your story was likely to map out and to end. And actually you made that choice to go, do you know what, actually, I'd like to rewrite how my journey is gonna map out, do something about it. When you think about the kind of the things that you aspired to achieve, like when you were in that environment and you were there, you know, just utterly miserable and thinking, I either leave or get out of here. What were you aspired to have?
You might want to start that out.
I just think when you were at that point, you know, when you were around 16, 17, 18, and you're like, you know, this is not working out for me. I've got to make a choice as to whether I either check out of life completely or I get out of here. What was the life you aspired to have when you looked outside of the world you were living in? What were you seeing that you were like, I want that for myself?
You know, it's a great, I don't think anybody's ever asked me that question. And all the conversations I've had about the cult is like, what was I thinking? You know, I do remember in around that time thinking, oh, I want to be a big corporate boss. I honestly thought I would climb the corporate ladder, be CEO. So there was definitely like leadership in my vision of who I wanted to be. I laugh now because I joke around about the real estate. I was like, I wanted $1 million home, which I have now, but it wasn't quite what I had imagined because, you know, it's only because the real estate's gone ridiculous here. You know, I have this little 1,100 square foot bungalow and it's worth $1 million.
It's worth that.
It's crazy, right? It's crazy.
You still got it though. You can tick the box.
I hit that mark, right? But I think, yeah, a lot of it was at that time was about status. It was about wealth. I wasn't really thinking much beyond that. But what's interesting is that, you know, when I did try working for somebody else, I very quickly saw that I'm not a good employee. In fact, you know, I told my very first boss to go and shove it up his ass because he was a chauvinist pig. And then, you know, I worked,
Do you think that because I had that realization back in my old corporate life, which is now like 20 plus years ago, was that I can't be an employee. I can't, I just don't make a great employee. And I linked for myself that it was to do with things that happened in my childhood about someone controlling me and the whole concept of control. And do you think that played a part in you not being, you know, having been in 18 years of not actually being in control of your thoughts, your words, your deeds and all of that? Do you think that played a part?
I think what's yes and no. I would say underneath, you know, now that I really look back, I could see I've always been a rebel. I've always been the one to challenge the status quo, to speak up against things. So a bit, but I think more my rebel piece and the need to be the leader. Instinctively, that's who I am. So I'm really not a good, especially corporate. I am just not. I would never be a yes person.
I used to have these people in my old corporate life, and I'd sit in these meetings and I would look around the room and I would have what I called the nodding dogs, who would like, you'd have like the senior, the other, like your line, you know, the managers, the power that be above in the meeting, and you're there. And I'd be listening to them, like thinking, is no one seeing that what they're talking about is a pile of crap? Like, it's just, it's not feasible. It's not this and the other. They're not going to get what they want. And it doesn't work. And I'd see everyone else just nodding, yes, yes. And I'd be like going, no, this is not going to work. Or this is not. And I could always see them looking down at me like, oh, it's you again. I was always like the rebel one that was always actually the one that was speaking the truth and was being probably the one with the most integrity for the company and the business, raising issues that no one else wanted to raise. They just wanted to keep nodding so that they might be seen for the next promotions or whatever. Yeah. And that was, it was very much kind of when I had to make the decision that, you know, I can't be a sheep. I can't be the person that's just going to sit here and be the nodding dog. I need to kind of, you know, take my wings and fly. So I really understand that concept. And so when you look now at the life that you've built for yourself, are you living the life that you hoped and wanted to be leading? Do you still have much work to be done in this? Or do you really feel like at this moment in time, you're really living in your moment?
I really feel like I'm living in the moment. I've done so much work. I mean, I continue to do work on myself. Yeah. You know, there's lots of other stories we could get into.
Always work to be done. Huh?
Right. But yeah, I'm really, really happy with where I'm at. You know, the business that I had, the massage supply outlet, I sold that in 2016. And I said to everyone that I retired at that point. And so now what I do, I love what I do.
Purely for joy.
Right. Purely for joy. And I get paid well, which is a great bonus. I have time off. I try to only work 4 days a week. I shouldn't say only, but most weeks it's only 4 days. So I have lots of free space there. And, you know, this skill that you talk about being the person to say the honesty, that's where, you know, people pay us to do this work now, instead of being the person that gets, you know, shat on because we've spoken up, we now get to be the one to say, okay, listen, this is what's going on. If you don't change it, you know, you're gonna pay for that. So you need to pay, right? You can pay me or you can pay for the mistake, whichever you'd like. So you know, it's using it. So yeah, I really have crafted a life that I absolutely love.
And you know, and that is very much what I want people that are listening to this and to listening to this podcast is to kind of grasp with both hands, is that it doesn't matter where you are right now. If you are living a life that is not fulfilling you, you know, the whole basis of like asking yourself right now to look at your life and say, am I happy? Am I happy and am I fulfilled? All the rest you can build on, but internally, am I happy or am I fulfilled? Mm-hmm. If I am not happy or fulfilled, whether it's in my life or my business, to have the capacity, the courage and the you know, the desire to make a change and to change that outcome. And so you've done that. You had a different start in life to a lot of us. And you use that and you use that, you know, you made the choice to make changes. You've had this incredible experience, which is, and you've now been able to bring all of that into the work that you're doing. And you have now designed that life that you want. And yet you and I are no different to anybody else. We have just chosen to make some different choices for the outcome of our lives. Now, for someone who's listening to this right now, and they're sitting there going, well, if you're asking me, am I happy and fulfilled? No, I'm not. Am I living the life that I aspire to live? No, I'm not. Am I running the business that I aspire to run? No, I'm not. What three tips could you share with them, Dana, that could help them kind of finish listening to this podcast, listen to your story, and actually go, right, the moment that this episode ends, I'm going to start to make some changes. What three tips would you give them?
So I would say the first thing is starting to recognize what are your deeper beliefs. So for me, where I move from on a spiritual level is that this life is not all that there is. This is one experience that we have. So we're in a physical body, having a physical experience, but looking beyond that and saying, okay, this is not everything that there is. Because when we start to pull back that perspective and start to, you know, see things from this is just one life, now we can take the pressure off of ourselves. Because there's a lot of outward pressure to say, I need to succeed. I need to make, you know, $1 million a year. I need to do XYZ. Taking that pressure off allows us to step into life from a playful place, from a place of like, oh, I get to instead I've got to. I get to play. I get to build a business if I want to. I get to do these fun things. And that's probably one of the biggest shifts is switching over to playing in the business, playing in everything that you do. And I would say the next piece is finding some tool that's going to allow you to let go of the pressures and the stresses. And so whether it is, you know, imagining throwing it into a fire, imagining throwing it into the garbage, writing it down and burning it, like there's so many different things that you could do. But on a daily basis, absolutely on a daily basis, find some sort of tool that works for you, because there's a lot of them. And I have lots if you need some help. So every day, be letting go of some more of your baggage. Every day, freeing yourself up a little bit more, because that's vital. We have to keep getting rid of the baggage. That's what's going to allow you to have freedom. So those are the first two things. And then the third thing is I would really recommend working with somebody to dig in and what are those pieces that you're not going to acknowledge on your own? Because those are the key pieces that are really going to pivot who you are and how you show up in business.
Great. They are fantastic. Fantastic. And I absolutely agree. One that I would like to throw in as well, just from what we were talking about earlier, is, you know, really look at the room that you're hanging out in and seeing if you're in the right room. If you're not in the right room, go to the right room. Mm-hmm. Also looking at the stuff that you're doing in your business right now and going, is this stuff I should be doing, or is this stuff someone else should be doing?
Yes. You know,
and actually really looking at your very valued time and saying, am I using this wisely right now? And looking at being, you know, how do I go from being the entirety of my business to being the CEO of my business? Because that's something that I know a lot of people struggle with. Dana, they are really, really great tips. And I think I could sit and talk to you for ages. What I would love to do, if it's okay with you, is we invite people to come and get involved in our little 10 question quick fire round, just so that people can get to know you even more. Is that going to be all right? Are you happy to get involved?
Absolutely. Bring it on.
I'm going to ask you 10 questions now. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Okay, they're nice and easy, but just go with the first answers that you come to. So, number one, do you have a favorite book?
You know what? This is where I'm like, no, I have a lot of favorite books, but not one single book.
I think we might have a little time delay again. But I think you can. All right. Throw us in one that you think our listeners should listen to.
You know, I think from things that we've talked on, I think the body never lies, to look at, you know, how trauma impacts your life.
Do you know what? That's come up before on here with this question. Really? So it is a book that people need to go and read. Yeah. Yeah. And I haven't read it, and I want to. If you could only eat one meal for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Oh, I would say steak and Caesar salad.
Okay, beautiful. When you were little, I know obviously you had a different upbringing, but was there a particular career or anything that you aspired to be when you were really little? Like 4 or 5 years old, when it's like, what do you want to be when you grow up? What did you fancy being?
I wanted to be a ballerina.
A ballerina. There you go. That's perfect. That's perfect. If you could have dinner with one person, dead or alive, fictional, historical, family member here, someone who's passed away, who would you want to have a dinner and chat with, if you could have with somebody?
Madonna. She's, I love her courage to be so bold and continually reinvent herself. And
with Madonna. She keeps showing up lately.
Yeah, we got that time delay again. Do you want me to do that one again?
She is absolutely great, isn't she? That's what I was just saying. She's absolutely great, Madonna, in the sense of, she's just like, I don't give a shit what any of you think about me. This is who I am.
Yeah, she has really pushed the boundaries and the limits of, you know, what it looks like to be a woman in power. What does it look like to be a woman with money? And, you know, challenging so many limits. She's got, you know, younger men. She's challenging so many stigmas. I love it.
Yeah, yeah. When you were little, did you have a nickname?
I think it was Dana Banana.
I love it. Are you somebody that would be a mountain cabin person, a city penthouse person, or a beach house person, or a combination?
Beach all the way.
Beach all the way. Can you give us one thing that's on your bucket list that you're yet to do?
I haven't gone skydiving yet.
Oh, you must do that. I've done it a few times. Make sure you do that. It's okay. Wonderful. It's wonderful. Is there a country that you haven't yet visited that you'd like to go to?
Indonesia.
Indonesia. Is that on the plan, or like sooner, or just
probably in the next 3 years?
Oh, I like it.
Yeah.
When you're not doing all your badass business performance coaching and doing all this great stuff, what's your kind of best downtime activity? What does Dana do when she's not spreading her genius?
I have a very active dating life. Let's put it that way. Yes. So Fridays are for F words.
I love it. That's brilliant. And looking, last question, if you were to look at favorite movies, if there's like your go-to movie that you want to watch when you're just kind of snuggled up and it's your easy movie, your favorite movie, or a movie that you like, you just like, I'd love it, people need to watch this movie, it's a good movie, what would it be?
Oh my goodness, there's so many this interesting piece. So I'll just pull on one that I rewatched recently, which was Chocolat. And you know, it's lovely. Huh? Yeah. Oh, yeah. In its early days, right? It's like, that's good. But yeah, the storyline is so delicious as well. How she transforms people's lives with decadent chocolate.
Oh, that's brilliant. That's been fun. And you survived. You survived the top 10 questions.
Yay!
Thank you so much for taking part and just having a bit of fun with me. Now, Dana, I just want to say thank you so much for joining us on today's episode and having this really, really great conversation with me today. I really appreciate your time and, you know, being on here early in the morning. Dana, if people want to connect with you to kind of just be more in your world, learn more about your stuff, learn more about the work that you do, you mentioned LinkedIn is kind of your main place to be. Are you just under your name? What do people look for if they want to come and find you on LinkedIn?
Yeah. So here's the great thing. I'm the only Dana Farrant in the world. So I am super easy to find. And Farrant is spelled Pharant. So Google me, LinkedIn, website, all good places.
A whole lot. And I'm going to be putting all your links on the show notes as well. Thank you. If you haven't got a pencil and paper to hand to jot this down, then it's fine. Just go to the show notes and you're going to find all of Dana's links there. Dana, thank you so much for your time today. I'm so grateful. Nikki. I've really, really enjoyed chatting with you. And to you guys listening, wherever you are in the world, thank you so much for joining both myself and Dana today to hear her story. And I really hope that as listening to this, you're sitting there thinking, right now, I'm going to start making some changes. I'm going to listen to those tips that Dana shared with me and her story and go, do you know what? If she can do it, so can I. It's time to make some changes in my life too. So I look forward to joining you guys listening on the next episode and have a lovely day wherever you are. Take care now. Bye-bye.